All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Mem Hey 45. We are picking up with the Mishnah 44b. Mem Dalet Amud Beis. The Mishnah 3 lines are from the bottom. So we'll say, I owe you a Rashi. It's actually the very long Rashi in Mem Dalet Amud Beis, which tells an incredible mice about Shimon ben Shetach. If we have some time today, because actually it's going to come up again at the end of the daf, I will come back to it. I owe it to you. I'm gonna make good on this. Maybe I'll record it separately, but okay, just you'll keep it in mind. Says the Mishnah. So let's remember again, we're going literally frame by frame, play by play over here, in the execution of the individual. So at this point in time, the accused, well actually at this point in time he's no longer the accused. He is the guilty party. Is Dalar Amos away from the base Haskila. So what would they do? Mafshitin also Esbegadov. So they go ahead and they strip him of his clothing. I will say, we are going to see the notion of stripping him of his clothing is, the conventional wisdom is, if he doesn't have clothing, or we'll see she doesn't have clothing, so the Maisa, again, death will happen faster, because apparently with stoning, the clothing serves as a barrier. The person is unclothed, so they will die faster. The notion of someone dying faster is considered to be an act of chesed that the Beis Din is able to do for the guilty party. So already at Dalet Amos from the Beis Haskila, we strip the accused. Ha'ish mechasen oso milafanov. So for a man, they cover him in the front, or so they give him like a little like a patch of clothing to cover the erva. Va'isha. And a woman is given a small patch of fabric or of clothing to cover herself in the front and in the back. The Chachamim say it's not true. A man is stoned while he is unclothed, but a woman remains clothed. In Aish Niskelas Aruma. A woman is not stripped of her clothing before being stoned. Tap of Nem Heim and Aleph. Tan Rabbanon. Ha'ish mechasen also perak echa milafan avisha shnei prakim bein milafan ha, bein malach areha, bepnei shakula ever, the Rabbi Huda. So what's Rabbi Huda holds? Rabbi Huda's opinion is that both a man and a woman are stripped of their clothing before being stoned. A man is given a small patch of clothing to cover the erva in front. A woman, because again, the erva extends from the front of her body, the makom erva, I should say, extends from the front of her body to the back of her body, is given an article of clothing or a piece of clothing to be able to cover herself in front and in back. The Chum say no. Ha'ish niskal arum, vein ha'isha niskal asaruma. The Chum fundamentally disagree, and they say, a woman is never unclothed. Right, she gets stoned, she is executed with her clothing on. A man is the only one ultimately again who has his clothing removed before being stoned. So the Gemara says, "My time out the Rabbanon." So we'll say, what's the Rabbanon's logic? Why is it that the Rabbanon say that only a woman is stripped, excuse me, that only a man is stripped of his clothing, but a woman is not? So Amakra, so we'll say this drasha is going to be a multi-tiered drasha. So Amakra, because the pasuk says the following. Viragmu oso. The pasuk says they will stone him. My oso. So we'll say, you could have just said viragmo. Viragmo, right? They stoned him. Why does it have to say oso? Ilema oso v'lo osa. See if you want to say oso means we stone a man, but we don't stone a woman. That can't be. Vaksiv votseisa esa ishahu. O esa ishahahi. The pasuk says they will take out the man or take out the woman to be stoned. So you see from here that's what? The punishment of stoning is visited upon both men and women. Ela mai oso. So rather, what does oso mean? Oso below ksuso. Rather, what oso means ultimately again is we stone the individual without their clothing. So the idea the Gemara is dashing over here means oso means you, right? The individual just by himself without any accessories, including clothing. So the Gemara says, I ha oso big susa. So the Rabbanan say, both say, now the drush over here is oso. Him below kasuso, without his clothing. So the Gemara Darshan is over here. That drasha is only by what? Is only by a man. But a woman, apparently, again, will be stoned even with her clothing. To which the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda says, what does Rabbi Yehuda do with this drasha? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Oso belo ksuso, lo shna ish velo shna isha. So Rabbi Yehuda says, the drasha of Oso belo ksuso is not meant to be gender specific. Rather, Oso velo ksuso means that anyone who is executed unclothed, and that applies both to men as well as to women. So we'll say, it seems to be, the fundamental machlokes in Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan is as follows. Everyone agrees that there is this drasha, viragmu oso. Why does it have to say oso? Oso means you stone essentially just him. Just him. No clothing. No clothing. So you unclothe him before you stone him. According to Rabbi Yehuda, ultimately again, that means dafka oso according to the Rabbanan, we say oso velo osa. That drasha is gender specific, just to teach you about men, but women do not have their clothing removed before being stoned. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda holds, no. That ultimately, again, the drasha of oso is not gender specific, it applies to anyone who is being executed. To which the Gemara says something very interesting. Now, both saying, now what would be the reason why the Rabbanan, now if we dash over a little bit like Taima Dikra, so what would be the reason why a man would be stoned unclothed and a woman would not? So bepashtos the Gemara says lameimra the Rabbanan chayshi leherhura. Now remember again, the act of stoning was one that was done publicly, as we will discuss. So is there maybe there's a concern that if there are other men there and they see a woman in a state of being unclothed, that what it will arouse them. It'll be choshish v'hirhur, that again, they'll become aroused by the sight of this woman, and ultimately, again, it could lead to the commission of all kinds of averos. So is that what we're concerned about over here? The meimra, t'rabbanan chayshi l'hirhura, for Rabbi Yehuda lo chayshi l'hirhura. So we'll say, so it appears that the Rabbanan are concerned about arousal, but Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned about arousal. Va'ipcha shaman alo, but yet we learned just the opposite. How so? This line, we'll say, listen to this. Hakoin oches bibigadeha. So we'll say, this is by sota. So part of the process by sota is that her clothing is ripped. So how is her clothing ripped? The kohen takes hold of her dress. Right? In nikru nikru. If the dress rips, it rips. Vim nifru nifrumu. And if it becomes tattered, it becomes tattered. Ad shemegala es liba. Until her heart is exposed. Vesoser es sarah. Similarly, again, the kohen undoes the braids of her hair. Rabbi Yehuda says the following. Em haya liba noah. If she has a pretty heart, and I will say that's not a reference to her midos, but rather, again, which means if she's an attractive woman, so lo haya megalehu, then the kohen had to take special care not to rip her dress. Vim haya sarana, and she had beautiful hair, lo haya sosro, they would not undo her braids. So we'll say the idea over here is why. So it seems to be that Rabbi Yehuda, in this case, is choshesh v'hirhur. That Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, we'll say part of the process of sota is that the woman is debased, the woman is embarrassed, she's humiliated. That's fine, but at the end of the day, not if it's going to lead to inappropriate thoughts for those who are around. Now again, difference with sota is at this point in time, the only people who are there are kohanim. Yisraelim would not be allowed in the place ultimately again where the sota is administered the waters. But lamais again, there are still plenty of men there. So the point the Gemara is making over here is you see that Rabbi Yehuda is choshesh lehirhura, and the Rabbanan seemingly are not. To which the Gemara says, no. I'm a rabbi. You can't compare the cases. We'll say by sota, there is the possibility that what? That this situation will have a happy ending and she will leave Beis Din alive. So the notion that she may leave Beis Din alive and then you have men who saw her at least in a semi-unclothed state, we have to be choshesh v'hirhur, and maybe again some of the pirchei kuna, the young kohanim, will lust after her. Hacha hamelakta. Here, remember again, in our case, she's about to be executed. Right? Once again, remember, we're talking about what's happening. Now again, is there the possibility, like we learned in the earlier Mishnah, that some new information is going to come about, she's going to be called back into Beis Din? It's possible. It's definitely possible, but highly unlikely. So the Gemara says, V'chitema, Asiles Grey Bachrinaisa. So this is very interesting. Well, maybe again, even in the case where she's being executed, why aren't we choshesh that maybe they'll see her in an unclothed state and become aroused to commit an avera with someone else? Rabbi, we'll say that's actually quite interesting. Gemiri, Ein Yetzer Hara Sholeit Ella b'mi she'enov ro'os. So there's a lot of incredible musar in this. We have a mesora, gemiri. We have a mesora. What's the mesora? That the Yetzirah does not take hold of things except of what you see. Let me say that better. That the Yetzirah only burns intensely for that which you see with your eyes. Meaning that if a man sees a woman in an unclothed state, his desire is going to be for that woman, to commit an Aveira with that particular woman. Lav Dafka, ultimately, again, that he's going to become aroused to go ahead and commit an Aveira with another woman. Now, I'll tell you something interesting about this. We have other Ma'amari Chazal and other Gemaras that contradict this idea. That ultimately, again, this is the whole Yisur of Lo Sasuru Acharei. This is this whole idea that sometimes when you see certain things with your eyes, it absolutely arouses you and awakens you to do other types of averos. But yet again, at least it appears for this particular concern, Chazal felt that the avera that could be committed through an arousal, through seeing this woman in an unclothed state, would be dafka, a desire to commit an avera with her. But we're not concerned that as a result of seeing her in this unclothed state, he's going to commit an avera with another. So that Rava says, therefore again we see Rabbi Yehuda is contradicting himself, or I should say, we have two contradictory statements in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, but the Rabbanan is not such a kasha. How so? Ela Amar Rabba, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda, lo kasha kideshaninon. Rather, Rabba said, the two statements of Rabbi Yehuda are not contradictory, because we use Rabba's resolution, in other words, Rabosai, that at the end of the day, because by sota she could emerge innocent, that's why again, we don't want, if she's attractive, we don't want her being seen in an unclothed state, because possible that when she leaves Bezin, someone will do something illicit with her. But Lamaisa, in the case of the execution, where she's about to be executed, we're not concerned that as a result of seeing her in an unclothed state, someone's going to commit an avera with another woman. Because the pasuk says, so according to this, not a contradiction with the Rabbanan either. Because what does the pasuk say? V'nosru kol hanoshim v'lo ta'asena kizam tichino. So the pasuk says over here, kizi masechno. So the pasuk says that all of the women should see what happened to this woman speaking about the sota, and they will not go ahead and do what she did. Hacha. So I'll say ultimately again, by the case of the sota, so the Rabbanon will say that we allow her to be in an unclothed state. Why? Because ultimately again, part of the process of sota is to serve as a deterrent for others for immoral behavior. Therefore again, the greater the degradation, the greater the deterrent. So says the Gemara. But in the case of execution, ein lecha yisur gadol mizeh. So the idea, this is why in Yiddishkeit, by the way, in the Jewish legal system, punishments, right, are often executed publicly, because the idea is that it's supposed to serve as a deterrent to negative behavior. So in the case of the sota, what's the deterrent? She will say, even if a woman is innocent and she didn't commit adultery, one thing is clear, which is what? She's not behaving appropriately. In other words, you don't get yourself into a sota situation unless you are allowing yourself to be in compromising positions. You might not have committed adultery, but one thing is clear, which is you're being alone with men who are not your husband. And when you are being alone with men, you're putting yourself in compromising situations. Therefore, the Rabbanan will say, the notion of having her in a state of being unclothed serves as a deterrent for women to allow themselves to be, or to not allow themselves to be in these type of situations. In the case of execution, there's no need to have her in a state of being unclothed. Why? Because the act of being executed in and of itself is the greatest musr and deterrent. So why don't we go ahead in the case of execution, why not even magnify the deterrent and have her executed, but have her executed unclothed? So therefore, again, the humiliation will be so intense that ultimately, again, it will be a great deterrent, a public deterrent. So I'll say this is amazing. Because the pasuk says, V'yahavta l're'acha kamocha. The pasuk says, love your fellow like you love yourself. What does this mean? Barer lo misa yafa. amazing. The halacha l'maisa, love your fellow like you love yourself, which means what? That even when you have to execute someone, do so with a misa yafa, a nice death. A nice death. What does the Nebuchadnezzar say? That even if someone is guilty in Kabul and has to be executed, we still have to be careful to whatever degree possible to preserve their dignity. Amazing. So the Gemara says, "Lemid Rav Nachman Tanaihi." So we'll say, let's say the Rav Nachman statement of the Haftarecha Kamocha is in and of itself a machlokes tanoim. To which the Gemara says, "Lo, to chuli amal isul Rav Nachman." It's not true. Everyone holds Rav Nachman. We'll say, listen to this. V'ha'cha b'ha'cha meflagi. So what's the machlokes to Rabban Rabbi Yehuda? Mar Savar Bizyoni di inish adif alei tvei minecha de gufei. Umar savernecha du gufei adif me bizyoni. So we'll say, listen to this machlokes. What's machlokes Rabbi Yehuda in the Rabbanan? Which one is more important to a person? Is a person more concerned about their humiliation and would rather save themselves from humiliation, even if what? If it means more physical pain? Or would a person be willing to suffer humiliation in order to avoid physical pain? We'll say, what's the nafkamina? The nafkamina is, let's accept the premise that if a person is stoned unclothed, so ultimately, again, they will die faster. But yet, even though they'll die faster, what happens? There's greater humiliation. So ultimately, again, the Rabbanon hold, that a person would rather suffer more physical pain and less physical humiliation, and less humiliation. Rabbi Yehuda holds a person would rather suffer less physical pain, even if that meant more humiliation. Incredible machlokes. So we'll say we end off over here with two conclusions. First of all, again, you should know, we paskin like the Chachamim, namely again, the Rambam says, that we only execute a man, right, in a state of being unclothed, but we do not remove the clothing of a woman who is to be executed, ultimately, again, to preserve her dignity. That's number one. Number two, we accept this premise of Rav Nachman of V'yahavta l're'acha kamocha, birlo misa yafa. Love your fellow like you love yourself, therefore choose for him a more dignified or honorable death. We will see the manifestations of that halacha mirat Hashem as we go forward. Says the Mishnah, Beis haskila haya gavah shtei komos. So we'll say the Beis haskila, the place where they executed the individual through skila. We'll say, as we're going to see, the way skila happened was, first a person was pushed off an elevated platform. If they did not die from impact, then they were stoned. We're going to discuss this process. So therefore, the Beis HaSkila had an elevation. What was the elevation? Shtei komos. Twice the height of a regular person. Echad min ha'edim doch fo al masnav. So we'll say the way we're going to see is a person would stand sideways on the edge of the platform and would literally be pushed by their hips. The goal was ultimately, again, that they would fall sideways. Somehow the impact, I guess, of falling sideways had the greatest probability for death, I guess, depending on the terrain, whatever it was. So they would be pushed by their hips. What happens? So let's say the person ends up falling, and he falls face down. Assuming that he did not die from impact, they turn him on his side. If he died from impact, they were yotze. So what does it mean they were yotze? Meaning this is still a fulfillment of me. What are you going to say? Do it again. You know, meaning if he's dead, the idea is they fulfilled skila. Even though skila means stoning, if he dies from impact, that is a fulfillment of the misas bezdin. So the Gemara says, ve'im lav, so let's say he doesn't die from impact. Hasheni no telasa evin menosna alibo. They take a stone, we'll say, we'll see a large stone. And ultimately, again, they throw it down. They throw it down onto the guilty party, onto his heart. The nosna libo, imes bayatza, if he dies as a result of this first stone. So they have fulfilled the obligation, ve'imlav, regimasa b'chol Yisrael. If not, Rabbi Osai, then klal Yisrael, right, the general public is invited to take part, or is obligated, not invited to take part, it sounds strange, is obligated to take part in his stoning, v'shene emar yad ha'edin tieba v'rishon ala miso, v'yad kala ambachrona. First, the Edim take part in the Skila, and afterwards, ultimately, again, the Edim. And afterwards, then the Am. Says the Mishnah, Tana v'komo shalo, hare kan shlosha. So we'll say something very interesting to point out over here. It actually turns out that the individual falls three stories, so to speak. Right? There's the two-story elevation of the actual platform, plus his own height. Plus his own height. So therefore, again, kivyachli falls three stories. So the Gemara says, miba ina kolehai, why do we need such a high platform? After all, again, or minu, ma bar shehu kedei lahamis, asar tfachim, af kol kedei lahamis, asar tfachim. Both sides. Going back to our Baba Kama days, when we spoke about bar, right? When we spoke about bar, right? A pit. So we'll say, what's the depth of a pit that Chazal say is capable of killing a person? 10 tefachim. So we see over here that even a fall of 10 tefachim has the ability to kill someone. Now both say, now granted, remember again, we saw in our Baba Kama days, the Gemara suggests that part of the deadliness of bar might also be certain subterranean vapors that are unlocked or that are unleashed ultimately again when you dig. But apparently the Gemara is not subscribing to this idea over there. The point is, why do you need two stories? Even 10 tefachim could be deadly. To which the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Ravu, Amar Kra, V'yehavta l're'acha kamocha, Barer lo misa yafeh. Both of you just, now twice in one day. What does the pasuk say? Love your fellow like you love yourself. If you have to execute him, try to execute him in the most humane way possible. She's both say, the higher the elevation, the greater the probability of death upon impact. That's considered to be a chesed that we do for the individual. To which the Gemara says, Ihachi likbei tfei. So if that's the case, why don't you make the platform even higher? Or just throw them off even higher? I mean, obviously we all know the higher the elevation, the greater the probability for death upon impact grows, right? I would assume there's a direct correlation between the increase in height and the probability of death upon impact. So if that's the case, that it's Yavtar Chakamocha, make it exceptionally high so that he'll for sure die upon impact. To which the Gemara says something amazing. No, we can't make the platform too high, Rabosai, because we don't want the body to become mangled. Shabbos says an incredible, incredible yisod. We don't want the body to become too disfigured. Even though the body may become disfigured, even upon the impact of two stories, the higher the platform, the greater the intensity and force of the impact, the greater disfigurement there could come to the body. So in order to avoid that, we make it high enough that he could die upon impact, but low enough that the body shouldn't become disfigured. I will say, it's incredible. You know, if you think about it, we should say to ourselves, who cares? If you got yourself into this mess, right, then whatever it is, it is. But you see, again, the incredible care and concern. I will say, if this is the care and concern, we have to have someone who's chayiv misa. Can you imagine the care and concern we have for one another when we're all tzaddikim? It's an incredible idea. So the Gemara goes right there. Echa mina edim dochfo. So one of the witnesses pushes him off the platform. Tan rabbanon minayin shebidichia. How do we know ultimately again that the guilty party is first pushed off the platform? Tamud lomar yoro, because the pasuk says yaro, and she says oh yaro yiyare. So yaro means push down. So we see from here that ultimately, again, the guilty party is pushed off the platform. How do we know that after the person is pushed, if they didn't die from the impact that they're stoned? How do we know skila? So we'll say the pasuk mentions both of these things. Therefore, tells me again, the O is not really an either or. The O in this case is much more an and. Person is pushed off, yaro yare usakol yisakel, and is stoned. How do I know that if he died upon impact, the Beis Din is yotze the din of skila? Tamud lomar o yaro yare, because we'll say the pasuk says, or you can just push. How do I know that this obligation, I should say, this surah of Misa applies for all future generations? Amud Beis Tamud lomar sakol yisakel. Fine. Ve'imlav eda sheni. No, tell us heaven. So we'll say, remember again, the two witnesses have to actively participate in the death of the individual. The first witness is the one who pushes him by the hips off the platform. The second one is, if he doesn't die from impact, throws the stone down on him. So the Gemara says, no tell. So remember again, we learned that the second witness picks up the stone and throws it down upon him. But Tanya, but we learned, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Evan Haisa Sham Masui Shnei Bnei Adam. Right? So what happens? So we'll say there was a stone that was prepared at the Beis Haskila, but it was a heavy stone. We say it's a heavy stone because the goal is, if the individual does not die from impact, we want him to what? We want him to die from that first stone. So it was a heavy stone that had to be lifted by two individuals. So the Gemara says, Notla Venosna Alibo, Emes Ba Yotza, Ulatamech Tikshilacha, He gufei mashi shnei bnei adam, masui shnei bnei adam, notla v'nosna alibo. So we'll say, so what's going on over here? Because in the Braisa it sounds like that what? See, I'll say differently. From the Mishnah it sounds like what's happening over here? One witness picks up the second stone. One witness, or excuse me, the second witness picks up the first stone. Yet, Shalom Braisa, what does it sound like? Two witnesses are picking up the stone, because ultimately, again, it's too heavy, so which one is it? Oh, to which thing was it? Ella, the midli la bahadi chavre, vishadi le ihu, kihechi de tisi mirazia. So we'll say, the Gemara says, here's how it works. Both of the witnesses lifted up together. Because to be lifted, you need two. But then Abba say, ultimately, is fully transferred into the hands of the second witness. And he is the one who unilaterally, who by himself, throws it down on the accused. Why? Kihechi de tisi mirazia. So we'll say, it's interesting. You know, Rashi points out of here, look at tisi mirazia. Rashi says, it should come from his strength. Mikoach gadol de shnayim en yecholim lechavin kocham. The concern is that if it's two people throw down the stone, you know, when two people throw something, they can never exactly line up their kochos at the same time. As a result, the stone loses some of its strength in the trajectory. When one person is dropping it, he could time it exactly at the moment that he wants. So therefore, the way it works is both of the witnesses lift it up, it's transferred fully into the hands of the second witness, and it's the second witness by himself who drops it on the guilty party. The Gemara goes weiter. Ve'im lav rigi maso. So remember again, if for some reason the first stone, if the fall doesn't kill him, the first stone doesn't kill him, then the rest of Klal Yisrael participates in the stoning. So it says the Gemara v'atanya, but we learned, me'olam lo shana ba'adam. I will say we learned that out of all the times that Skila was carried out, there was never a person who lived past the dropping of the first stone. Right? Meaning, it appears that most people were killed upon impact, and those who weren't killed upon impact ultimately, again, were killed by the first stone. So why does the Mishnah say that Lamaisa, if he wasn't killed by the stone, all of Klal Yisrael participates? The Brisa clearly indicates that what? No one ever really lived past the first stone, to which the Gemara says, Mika Amina David, the Mitzvah Kamina. To which the Gemara says, we're not saying, the Mishnah is not saying that they did throw that they did have the second round of stones. Rather, what is the Mishnah saying? That if you needed it, meaning if for some reason the person didn't die from impact, didn't die from the first stone, and therefore you still needed to kill them, this is how it would be done. Amar Mar. Evan Haisas. Remember again, Mar says it was, the Mishnah says that Lamai said there was a stone that was prepared right at the base Haskilo to be used to execute the individual. Vatanya, but we learned Achas Evan Sheniskoba, Vaachas Eat Shenitla Alov, Vaachat Saif Shenheragbo. We have to say we learned that this, whether it was the stone that was used for stoning, or again, the tree that a person was hanged on, or the sword that ultimately, again, a person was killed with, or the sudar, the rope, or the kerchief that a person was strangled with, kulan nikbarin imo. We'll say all of them were buried with him. It's actually quite interesting, right? That whatever the object used for execution, whether it was a sword, whether it was a tree, whatever it was buried together with the guilty party. It's incredible. Har nikbarin imo. Rashi says over here, we're going to see it in tomorrow's daf. We'll say this was part of the covet that was given to the guilty party. So we'll discuss why. So we'll say, the Mishnah makes it sound like they had a stone. There was like a base askila stone. This was the stone. But Pipashtos, based on what we just learned, what would happen to the stone that was used for the execution of the individual? It would have been buried with him. So if it was buried with him, then how could it be prepared at the base askila? To which the Gemara says, Lo tzicha demiskini. No, what it means is, every single time a person was to be stoned, part of the process for execution was, Beis Din would prepare a proper stone at the Beis Haskila. Obviously, once that stone was used in the stoning of the individual, it was then buried along with them. But the idea is, part of this process was, a stone was always prepared at that site. Nikbarnimo. The object used for execution was buried with him. Vatanya, enik barnimo. But the Brisa says it wasn't put with him in his grave. Amar Papa, my imo b'tfisaso. What does it mean, Abosei, when we say that the implement or the utensil of execution was buried along with the guilty party? Abosei, it doesn't mean that it was buried with him in his kever. What it means is that it was buried within Dalet Amos of his grave. The idea being about that we assume that a mace, when a person is buried, so that kever really takes up the four amas around it. Rabbi said, that's why, again, you know, we know this halacha from a different perspective, which is the mitzvah, or the obligation of, or the prohibition of loig l'rash. Right? Rabbi said, that's why a person can't have their tzitzis out within dalet amas of a grave. A person can't go and put on tefillin within dalet amas of a grave. So why? The idea is because within dalet amas, that's considered to be the property of the deceased as well. So when the Braisa says over here that we would bury the utensil for execution along with the individual, doesn't mean that we would bury it in his open grave. What it means is we would bury it in Dalet Amos next to him. Incredible. Amr Shmuel, Bo says, that's very interesting. Nikta ayat ha'idin pater. Bo says, listen to this. Let's say you had witnesses who testified in a capital case. And then what happens? One of the witnesses loses a hand. His hand is cut off. His hand is cut off. So what's the halacha? A pater. Rabbi say the accused or the guilty party goes free. Why? My time. Deba'ina yad ha'edin tia boba rishona v'leka. Rabbi say the guilty party gets off on a technicality. What's the technicality? The pasuk says yad ha'edin tia boba rishona. The hands of the Edim have to be upon him first. In other words, they have to be the first to carry out the punishment. Therefore, if the Ed no longer has a hand, ultimately the accused gets off on a technicality. Elamiata, one second. Edim Gidmin de Meikara Hachanami de Psili. Are you telling me then that, let's say again, the Ed never had a hand? But let's say again, you're dealing with an Ed, either again, who lost his hand sometime before, or was born without a hand. So you're telling me now that an aid without a hand is unfit to be an aid. So if he doesn't have hands, he can't go ahead and testify. Hakanah dipsili shiny hasam. That case is different, right? The amakra yad ha'edim shahaisa kvar. The Gemara says, no. This is a very specific technicality. What is this talking about? An aid who had a hand at the beginning of these proceedings, but then lost it at some point in time. So it's a scriptural technicality. The yad ha'edim, if he had a yad at the beginning of these proceedings, he's got to have a yad at the end. And if he doesn't, then ultimately, again, the accused goes free. If he never had a yad to begin with, then ultimately, again, his testimony is acceptable, and the guilty party would still be found guilty. Or say the punishment would still be carried out. Meisvei. Now, both say, now, what this highlights over here is the following. What this highlights is an approach to almost, I should say, almost like a literalist approach to understanding psukim. Right? That ultimately, again, when the Torah says, Fiyat ha'edim tiyeh bo barishona, that the hands of the Edim have to be on him first, that literally what the Torah is telling me is that if the Edim had hands at the beginning of this proceeding, they have to have hands at the time of the execution as well. And if not, the accused party or the guilty party goes free. So it's a literalist approach to understanding the Pesukim. So the Gemara says, Meisvei, raise a kash on this. Komakum sheyedu shnayim v'yomrami Edim anu b'yishploni shenik ma'edin v'beizdin uploni edav. So if two people shop in Beizdin, I'm going to say, two people shop, Reuven and Shimon shop in Beizdin. And what do they say? We testify about Ploni that he was found guilty of murder, right? He was found guilty of murder, capital crime, in so-and-so Beis Din, and A, B, and C were his Edim. People say, what's the halacha? Harei zei hareg. Ultimately, again, this second Beis Din could execute this individual based on the testimony of these individuals. So we'll say, what do you see from here? Look at Rashi. Harei zei hareg. Va'afapi she'in kan yata idim arishonim. So we'll say, now how can you execute Ploni in this situation? After all, again, you're going to be executing him based on the testimony of these witnesses. These witnesses presumably were not the original witnesses. The pasuk says, Yat ha'idim tiyeh bo barishona, that the hands of the witnesses who testified against him ultimately have to be upon him first. And over here it's going to be executed through other witnesses. So you see again, you don't have to take a literalist interpretation of the pasuk. To which the Gemara says, no. Tirgum Shmuel Bahain Hain Edov. Shmuel says, no, what's the case? The case is where the witnesses who are coming to testify, I will say, in front of the second Beis Din, are the actual witnesses who testified against Ploni in the first Beis Din. Umi ba'inan kra. So it says the Gemara, I don't understand. Do you really need a literal interpretation of the Pesukim? So the Gemara says, Umi ba'inan kra kidichsiv. Do you really have to interpret the Pasuk as it is literally written? After all that time, we learned in our Braisa, Mos umas hamakeh rotzeachu. The Pasuk says, you have to execute the rotzeach. You have to execute the murderer because he is a rotzeach. Only elabemisaksuvavo. So also, I only know that you execute the murderer with the prescribed misa. In other words, I each type of murder comes, or each act of murder comes with its own type of misas bezdin. So I only know that you can execute the murderer ultimately again in the prescribed form of execution. Shatam amisa. We'll say first white line. Mamhamud beis. Shatam amisa. Bechol misa. Shati yachol amisa. So this is interesting. How do I know? What happens if, let's say again, say we'll say for argument's sake, Ruvain murders Shimon, and the nature of the murder is such that Ruvain is punishable by saif, by death by a sword. There's only one problem, which is there are no swords. There are no swords. Right? There are no swords. I will say, by the way, you know that there were times historically where Jews were not permitted to own metal utensils. Were not permitted to own metal instruments, right? Out of fear of rebellion or a variety of different things. So I'll say, so let's see, you have a case like this. Yeah, Bezin is supposed to execute the individual with a scythe, with a sword. But what? There are no swords. How do I know that I could hang the accused instead? Talmud Lomar. Most yumas hamaka mikomakom. So I'll say ultimately again, the pasuk says most yumas hamaka. You could kill him in any way. Shiny hasam. So what do you see from there? You see from there this would seem to advocate for a non-literalist approach to understanding psukim. That since even though the pasuk says he has to die by a sword, but nevertheless we interpret that to mean yes, ideally it's supposed to be by a sword. But if he can't do it by a sword, then what? You kill him any way you can. To which the Gemara says that's not a good riot. We'll say second wide line man hamud beis. Shiny hasam damakra mos yumas. We'll say that pasuk is different. Why? Because it says mos yumas. That double lashon mos yumas means kill him any way you can. In other words, the ideal will be, we'll call it through a sword, but lamaisa mos yumas means you execute him any way you can. The ligmar mine. So why don't you learn from here that it went that you don't have to take a literalist approach to the pasuk, that even when it comes to misa, the Torah might suggest, or might tell you, ideally, this is how you should execute the individual. But we could execute him in any way we need to. To which the Gemara says, "Mishum dahavi rotzeach v'gol adam shnei ksuvin abayin keachem." Because we will say rotzeach, the case of the murderer, and gol adam. We will say gol adam means the case of where a person kills someone else accidentally. So remember again, the death could be avenged by a relative of the victim. That's why the murderer, the accidental murderer, has to escape too. The Ir Miklat. So rotzeach and gol adam are shnei ksuvin abayin keachem. So also we have this principle that whenever the Torah espouses a unique principle, if the Torah espouses a unique principle in one place, that teaches you that what? That unique principle should be globally applied. When the Torah espouses a unique principle in two places, it tells you that the unique principle should only be applied in these two places and not in other circumstances. So the Gemara says the following. Gol Hadam Mai, what's the case of Gol Hadam? So I'm sorry, Rotzeach Hadam. So also we just quoted the case of the Rotzeach. Most Yumas tells you that although ideally you should execute the Rotzeach in a particular way, if you can't execute him in that particular way, execute him any way you can. What's the case of Gol Hadam? Gol Hadam Mai, he disanyo. Gol Hadam Yamis HaRotzeach. The pasuk says that the Gol Hadam, the relative of the person who was killed accidentally, has the right to avenge his relative's blood. Mitzvah begol adam. So the mitzvah is the gol adam. Right? I should say the mitzvah to kill the individual is through the gol adam. We not listen to this. Umenayim shim ein lo goel. We'll say, how do I know if the deceased, the person who was accidentally killed, let's say he doesn't have a relative. What do we do in that case? So where do we know that shebezdin ma'amidin lo goel, that Rabozai, based in, I guess, it's like they outsource, like a temp, right? You have a Gol Adam temp, right? How do I know that Lamaisa, again, based in, hires someone to be the Gol Adam? Rabbi, just as an aside, why would so let's say there's no Gol Adam, so you have to understand something. The presence of the Gol Adam is an incredible incentive for life vigilance. We are talking about someone who killed someone else accidentally, a shogeg. In every case of shogeg, there is some element of negligence. How do we know that? Because if there's absolutely zero negligence, then we call that what? Mm-hmm. We call that ones. And if you're ones, then you're not obligated to go to galus or anything like that. Every case of shogeg, by definition, there is an element of negligence. The existence of the gal hadam rabosai, the notion that if I am negligent and by accident I kill someone, there's going to be someone who has the right to kill me. And the only way for me to escape, ultimately, again, is to the ir miklat, to the city of refuge, creates an urgency for life vigilance. So therefore, again, the Gemara says, even if there's no related gal hadam, Beis Din is going to hire someone. Where do we know that from? Shneemar bepigo bo mikol makom. So Rabosai, you see from here that both in the case of Goal Adam and in the case of Rotseach, the Torah goes out of its way to teach me that you need not interpret the pasuk literally, but even if there is no relative, we'll hire a Goal Adam. And even if you can't execute the individual the way he should be executed, we'll execute him in a different way. But is that true that we don't interpret Psukim literally? So the Gemara Sevata and we learned, Haya echad mehem gidem o ilem o chiger o suma o chiresh enon ase ben somar. So listen to this, absolutely amazing. This week's parasha, the beginning of parasha's kisetiv in Sora Morris. So watch this. How do we know that if one of the parents was gidem, right? So both say gidem means literally missing a hand, missing a limb. Ilem, mute. Chiger, crippled. Suma, blind. Cheresh, deaf mute. Enon ase ben sora mora. That the kid can't become a ben sora mora, cannot be labeled as a rebellious child, and cannot be executed. Shenemar, v'tav subo v'lo gidmin. Because the pasuk says, the parents will take hold of the child. Obviously, in order to take hold of the child, you need what? You need hands. Therefore, if the parents don't have hands, kid can't become ben sora mora. Vot siu oso, they have to take him out to the Beis Din ultimately to be executed. V'lo chigrin, if they don't have legs, they can't take him out. V'amru, they have to say to the Beis Din, v'lo ilmin, therefore they can't be mute. B'neinu zeh, they have to be able to say, our son, which requires what? Visual recognition. V'lo sumin, therefore they can't be blind. Einenu shomea bekolenu, they have to say he doesn't listen to us. V'lo charashin, in order to say that, they have to be hearing, right? Individuals, they can't be deaf. So I'll say, so what do you see from here? So you see that we take a literal interpretation of the pasuk, my taima, lav, we'll say, why do we dash in it this way? Lav mishum deva inon kra kidichsev. Is it not because we have an obligation to dash in the pasuk as it is written? To which the Gemara says, lo, shiny house under the kule kra yiseru. We'll say, at the end of the day, it's different over here. Why? Because this entire pasuk ultimately, again, is considered to be extraneous. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Kulei kra yiseiruhu tahavile lemichtav votziuhu al shar ha'irahi usekaluhu kidichsev b'chol shar niskalim v'su lo midi kol orech devarim zelam." So also the idea over here is the Gemara says all of these statements of the pasuk are extraneous. All the pasuk needed to say, so the parents needed to bring him to Beis Din, and ultimately, again, he's stoned. I don't need all of this extraneous verbiage. He didn't listen to us, he didn't this. We know the process of Ben Sora Mora. The fact that there's an extra pasuk teaches me that what? That again, if the parents don't satisfy all of these criteria, the child is not executed. We're both saying along the same lines, Tashma, Ein Lorachov, we're both saying something about Ir Nidachos. Ir Nidachos is a city whose residents are condemned to death because the majority of the residents worship idolatry. The pasuk says not only do you wipe out the residents, but you burn all of the possessions of the city. What do? You bring all of the possessions, El Rechov Ha'ir, to the street of the city, and you burn it there publicly. In La Rechov, let's say it's a small town, and it doesn't have a major road, right? It doesn't have a street. So what do? Ein Naasis Ir Nidachos Ir Rishol. But Rishol says, okay, if there's no street, then what? It can't become an Ir Nidachos. Rabbi Kiva Omer Ein La Rechov Osin La Rechov. Rabbi Kiva says, no, if it doesn't have a road, then what do? We make a road. We make a street. So the Gemara says, Ad Kan Lo Pligi Ela De Mar Savar Rechov De Mei Kara Bayinan Omer Savar Rechov De Hash Dami De Mei Kara Dami. So I'll say the only machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael is whether or not it needed to have a road, you know, at the beginning of its city kite, you know, at the beginning of its cityhood, right? But the Maisa, everyone agrees that when the Pasuk says that you bring it into the road, it means what? It literally means that the city itself has to have a main road. That's what everybody agrees with. At the end of the day, everyone subscribes to the idea, Rabbi, say that's what? That you have to interpret, you have to take a literalist interpretation of the Pasuk and interpret the Pasuk as it is written. To which the Gemara says, in reality, tonight, here. Both say, how closely we have to interpret a pasuk, or how literally, is machlokes tenayim. How so? Listen to this. Tisnan. Both say, this is by the mitzora. So part of the purification of the mitzora is that the blood of his karbanos is sprinkled on his right ear, his right thumb, and his right big toe. What's the shayla? Ein lo bohen yad, bohen regel, ozin yimanis. Ein lo tara olamis, ein lo tara olamis. Both listen to this. Let's say, the mitzora doesn't have a big right toe. Yeah, good. A big toe on his right side, right? A big toe on his right side, or a big right toe, or he doesn't have a both side, a right thumb, or he doesn't have a right ear. So the Tanakhama says, Ein lo tara olamis. He can never be purified, because since the blood can't be put on the right spot, therefore he has no tara. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, no sin al makomo. Viotse, Rabbi Eliezer says, no, if there's no right toe, or no right thumb, or no right ear, you just simply sprinkle the blood on the makom, on the spot. Rabbi Shimon Omer, no sin al smolo viotse. Rabbi Shimon says, you place it on his left ear, or his left thumb, or his left toe, and that's okay. So we'll say, you see from here that what? You see from here that there's a fundamental machlokas as to how much of a literalist one has to be, ultimately, bless you, ultimately one has to be when going ahead and interpreting these psukim. So we'll say, this Gemara ends off over here. This remains as a fundamental machlokes, which is not resolved in this sugi. So we'll stop over here for today. And we'll pick up with the Mishnah tomorrow morning.